From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Michaela Lafrac, filling in for Mitch Wortlieb. It's Tuesday, April 23rd, and here are today's headlines. One of the longest-serving lawmakers in Montpelier announced yesterday that he won't seek re-election. Bobby Starr first arrived in the State House as a House representative in 1979. The Northeast Kingdom resident was later elected to the Vermont Senate, where he served as chair of the Agriculture Committee for the past decade. The 81-year-old Troy resident made the announcement during an emotional speech in Newport yesterday morning.
My wife and I have come to the conclusion that maybe it's time that I retire.
County Senator Russ Ingalls says Starr, a fiscally conservative Democrat, is part of a, quote, dying breed in Montpelier.
We have a very few up-and-comers who know how to cross party lines and know what to do as far as to represent their people, their kingdom, and it's a sad day.
Starr is the third longtime member of the Senate to recently announce their departure from the chamber. Grand Isle County Senator Dick Mazza resigned from the Senate earlier this month due to health reasons. And Windsor County Senator Dick McCormack previously announced he won't seek another term. President Joe Biden approved a federal disaster declaration on Friday. It will help communities in five Vermont counties recoup money spent recovering from January's severe winter storm. The declaration covers Chittenden, Essex, Franklin, Lamoille, and Orleans counties. Eligible reimbursement costs include power restoration, debris removal, road and public building repairs, staff overtime pay, and contractor assistance. State and federal officials identified more than $2.3 million in eligible storm-related costs during a preliminary assessment in January. The final tally will be higher statewide, according to a news release from the state. Efficiency Vermont is rolling out a new online tool to help Vermonters calculate which weatherization and EV incentives and rebates they're eligible for. Vermont has seen unprecedented federal funding for electrification and home weatherization in recent years. But with a mix of state and federal rebates and programs run by utilities or community organizations, it can be hard to know where to start looking. Launched on Earth Day, the new tool shows all the discounts and rebates a person qualifies for, based on income, where they live, and whether they're a renter or homeowner. The tool is online at rewiringamerica.org. Biologists in Hartford are studying how spraying for ticks in your yard impacts the other insects living there. The Vermont Center for Eco Studies surveyed 70 properties last year, those that spray for ticks and those that don't. So far, they found that tick treatments do impact other species, especially spiders and caterpillars. That's according to reporting from the Valley News. The Center for Eco Studies is surveying more properties this season, including those that spray with essential oils and traditional pesticides. They're still looking for property owners to work with. You can reach out to the center for more information. Coming up, how New Englanders are trying to protect their properties from flooding in the face of more extreme rain and storms. That's after this. This week, journalists with the New England News Collaborative are telling stories about how we can adapt our homes to help deal with climate change. With more precipitation in New England and more intense storms, property owners are taking action to prevent flooding. But as NEPM's Nancy Cohen reports, for some, the best choices may be counterintuitive.
Kent Hicks knows a lot more about buildings than the average homeowner. He's a general contractor and teaches sustainable design at UMass Amherst. But in 2011, Tropical Storm Irene taught even him a lesson.
I looked out the window and I saw that this hurricane thing is real.
Hicks lives right next to the Westfield River in an old grist mill in West Chesterfield, Massachusetts. Irene not only dropped a lot of water quickly, it uprooted trees. To protect his house, he got into the water.
I was pushing debris away logs were coming down until I got about up to my chest, and I thought, all right, I need to get out of the water.
The river rose about 10 feet. He was worried pressure from the water would push against the building, and it would float away.
It was within a few feet of lifting the building up, and it would have taken it over the gorge.
Since then, Hicks has re-engineered his building in a surprising way to let the water in. He walks through a double set of doors into his basement.
With the flooding event, these doors will come open on this side and let water flow through here. So I'm not trying to stop water.
Across the basement, windows would also serve as water vents. The idea is to allow floodwaters to enter the house and rise and fall with the water outside so that the pressure of the water is equalized and the house isn't carried away. It may sound extreme, but even FEMA recommends what it calls wet floodproofing in some circumstances, but most people try to keep the water out. Craig Leader has been helping people do that for about 25 years by installing drains and sump pumps in basements.
Now we're running full force 12 months a year and at times gasping for air trying to keep up.
Leader is keenly aware of the impact of a changing climate.
Just by how our rain seasons are, our winter seasons are.
Leader's company installs systems that can withstand extreme weather. Mike Davis in Florence, Massachusetts got one after he had a flood.
I had 3 inches of water in the basement, covering everything, including the furnace.
That was in 2011, after an October nor'easter knocked out power for about 3 million people, including Davis. He had a sump pump, but without power, it didn't work, so he grabbed a bucket.
In the dark, in the cold, I filled 5-gallon buckets over and over and over.
A few years ago, he installed a new system, 3 sump pumps, 2 on a backup battery.
I can even test the battery and test the... That's testing the sump pump to confirm that it'll work if the power is out.
That cost him $3,000 out of pocket. That personal expense is common, according to Alex Wilson of the Resilient Design Institute in Vermont. Wilson says adapting to climate change should be a high priority, but there isn't much public funding.
Most of the federal funding that's available is only after the fact.
He says insurance companies should incentivize measures to prevent flooding. Homeowner Mike Davis also paid to reconfigure his gutters, and he replaced a concrete patio with grass. Allowing water to filter into the ground is almost always better than having an impervious surface, says landscape designer Rachel Lindsay.
So this is a little bit of a tight space, but you can see the gutter coming down the side of the building.
She points out a system she installed in downtown Northampton, where water used to gush out of a gutter.
We've installed an interrupter that's redirecting the water into this tank. The tank is then connected to a soaker hose.
A hose, perforated with tiny holes, releases water slowly in a narrow garden. She says water can cause problems when it's concentrated.
Water coming out of a gutter has a lot of force, and it can erode soil, it can get into your basement. If you spread it out and slow it down, it's not a problem.
And if water is slowed down, it can recharge the aquifer, a good strategy for addressing another aspect of climate change, drought. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Nancy Cohen.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Lexi Krupp. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelin, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Talk to you later.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.